This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. The Senate passed a nearly $21 billion budget in the state this week. It's a 413-page bill chock full of spending limits as well as policy provisions. The budget cuts education and closes some state prisons while putting aside hundreds of millions of dollars for tax reform. Jessica Jones is here to talk about the ins and outs of the proposed budget and where it goes from here. Jessica Jones, WUNC's Capital Bureau Chief. Welcome back. Good to have you here.
Thanks so much.
Let's talk about this budget now. Let's talk about education, for instance. What's the impact on education with this proposed budget?
Well, we can in the Senate budget proposal, there certainly are cuts to education. There's no doubt about it. But most people would say that it's better, at least for the UNC system, than the governor's budget was. So the university system still faces cuts. $48 million would be cut from UNC campuses for the first year. And then they take a big hit the second year with $75 million cut. Community colleges would also get less money. And then also, in terms of K through 12, the situation is not that great. Teachers and other state employees as well wouldn't be getting raises. There is a merit increase for teachers in the second year, but it doesn't fund teachers' assistance in the second and third grades.
And then there is also a provision. Is that in the budget or is that legislation elsewhere that talked about raising the limits and removing limits on class size in the state?
I believe that is in the budget. I believe that is something that is in the budget,
which ultimately saves money, but then it does have an impact on education if you
that's
have
right,
larger and larger classes.
That's right. Fewer teachers and more kids in those classrooms.
So you talked about the UNC system. How does the Senate proposal compare with the governor's proposed budget?
Well, there are a lot of similarities between the two budgets. The Senate plan spends $17 million less, but I guess you know, certainly there are some similarities. The Senate budget proposal goes easier on the UNC system. But then there are things that the governor really does not like about the Senate's budget proposal. So one of the things that he's not so happy about is that the Senate budget would eliminate special superior court judges. That's been a big point of contention. And there's no eugenics compensation provided for in the Senate budget. No salary increases for state employees. So those are some points of difference between Senate leaders and the governor.
So eugenics, for instance, the governor wanted compensation for those victims of the state's eugenics program, which went into the 1970s here in North Carolina. The Senate eliminated that. All right. K through 12 affected UNC system. And of course, they have to do this. They're saying we have to have any cut budget, but that's because they don't want to raise taxes. And so the impact on economic development, for instance, could be profound. This has been a business-friendly state in large part because of the high quality of education, particularly higher education. So you start to degrade education and then you threaten economic development along the way, a risk I guess they feel they have to take. Let's talk about, so that's education, and I want to talk about Medicaid too, because that's also an important part of this budget.
That's right. So Medicaid has been a huge sticking point in the budget, and Senate budget writers have said that they have been very, very concerned about it. So the proposal for state government spending through mid-2015 sets aside $1.2 billion over those 2 years for additional costs of Medicaid. And we know that more and more people are coming on the Medicaid rolls. I think there's an estimated 80,000 people who are expected to come on by the end of, after about a year. And so it is a big concern for the state. So the Senate budget would mean that there would be a higher level of Medicaid spending. But because there are so many people whose needs need to be met through the program, what we would see within the program are individual cuts within it. So copays would go up. There would be many programs that would be cut. I mean, you know, one thing that some people are talking about is that three alcohol and drug abuse treatment centers would be cut. Some community-based and residential addiction treatment would be cut. Lots of things within the program that really still wouldn't be offered because it makes up a huge share of the budget.
And of course, earlier this year, the Senate and in fact the legislature approved a measure that takes us off of the Affordable Care Act, and therefore turned back billions of dollars in federal money that would have supported this, and means that 500,000 people are essentially eliminated or excluded. They may not have been on the rolls, but are now excluded. Now, how do you justify that? What's the rationale there, turning back money and yet having then to increase our budget to meet at least some of the increased demand?
Well, Democrats are pretty upset about it. Democrats have said, why didn't we take that federal money that would have helped us cover that 500,000 people in the state who should be covered? But Republicans didn't want to accept that money. So that is definitely a talking point that you'll hear very, very often in the halls of the legislature right now. But what's done is done.
And when you ask them why you didn't want to accept that money, they say,
well, I think across the country, North Carolina was one of many Republican-led states that really didn't want to accept that extra money for various reasons. And I think North Carolina was part of that group.
Take that, Barack Obama. Two fingers in the eye. We'll show you that we didn't like your Obamacare. It's a lot of money to turn back for a kind of a political statement, isn't it?
It's a lot of money to turn back, but the thing is, it's already been done. Mm. And so, I mean, the reality, just as a reporter now, the reality is that there are 500,000 people who are not going to be covered, and they're in a very difficult position. So moving forward, that is going to be something that the state has to think about, because health policy experts will point out that those 500,000 people, well, they'll say, so where are these people going to get their health care? Well, they're much more likely to go to the emergency room and drive up costs for all of us. So that's part of the debate, but that's where we stand now.
All right. Well, so tax reform is also related to this budget. Tell us about how those two things work together, tax reform.
So in the Senate budget writers set aside $770 million for tax reform. And that was probably the most heated part of the whole debate that we heard when the budget was passed. And Republican leaders say that that tax reform is needed, that we do need to reform the tax code. And actually, there are people on both sides of the aisle who said we really need to take a look at the tax code and tweak it. We need to change some parts of it. But Democrats have said, why should we set aside that huge sum of money when we could give more money to teachers or the university system or help people in the state who are economically struggling? And so that was a huge focal point of debate.
When you say set aside that money, what do you mean? How is that set aside? What is that? What are you saying?
Well, it's money that would be earmarked. It's money that would help provide, that would go toward reforming the tax code. Now, I don't know exactly how that would work out over the next year, but we just know that that's what Republican leaders say.
So in the tax, the Senate package now, how do taxes change? We know that there had been a proposal to, for instance, tax groceries at the same rate as the rest of the state sales tax, which is about 6.5% versus the 2% right now. That's, of course, a regressive tax. It affects poor people disproportionately because they buy as much food as wealthy people. So that was one of the bones of contention. How did that end up in the Senate package?
Well, it's pretty much what we knew Senate leaders wanted to do before. I mean, they want to lower state and personal income taxes personal income taxes and the corporate income taxes, and they want to broaden the sales tax base by taxing some services as well. That certainly is part of the plan. The thing that Democrats are upset about is they say that part of this tax reform package that Senate leaders want will benefit the wealthy and not low-income and middle-income people. So, you know, if I look at it from a bird's-eye perspective, that's what the argument is about.
In other action this week and in the state legislature over on the House side, a House committee, the Judiciary Committee, has approved a compromise package on the Dorothea Dix lease. Tell us about that.
So there is a bill that has passed the House Judiciary Committee that was earlier this week, and it would give the city of Raleigh and the state a year to renegotiate the lease agreement that was signed by Governor Perdue and Mayor Nancy McFarland back in December. And I should say that Governor McCrory has publicly backed that bill. He thinks that it's a good idea. It would give Raleigh the chance also to buy a second parcel of land across Western Boulevard to add to the Dix campus potentially. And under that bill, the state would keep 30 acres to house people who work in the Department of Health and Human Services.
So this compromise is a compromise over and against a Senate-passed bill that just eliminates the deal that had been worked out over the course of 10 years in the city of Raleigh. Tell us about that and why the House, you think, has decided, House Republicans think it's a better idea to at least give them another year to negotiate and not just throw the old one out the window.
Well, I think this is one of those one of those areas where we see a sharp difference between the House and the Senate and the Dix bill, or the way that, that leaders are approaching this, I think really puts those differences in sharp relief. So Senate leader, the Senate President Phil Berger has always been very, very opposed to Dix. I mean, he came out, I think, right after Governor Perdue signed the agreement and Mayor Nancy McFarland saying it was a bad deal and it was illegal because it was done at the last minute. It wasn't illegal. It was signed. It was a lease like anything else. But leaders in the Senate were very unhappy about it. House leaders in the House really weren't very vocal about it at all. And I think in that case, silence was golden. You could definitely tell there were no joint press conferences. There were no joint statements. And it's pretty clear that Phil Berger was out on his own and on that issue. And then the fact that the governor has come out and said that he really, you know, he would favor giving the state and Raleigh a year to, you know, kind of bide their time. I think that's very telling.
And this compromise would actually give more land to this park than in the original agreement, than the Bev Perdue signed agreement, right?
Well, I think there's a reason why we've seen Mayor Nancy McFarland smiling in all of her most recent photo ops, because it's certainly better than what could happen.
And this deal that had been negotiated, as we say, over 10 years in Raleigh, included and had the support of a lot of well-heeled Republican donors in Wake County.
Yes,
which
it did.
May have something to do with the conflict among Republicans over this particular issue.
Yes, I think it does. The coalition of business and civic leaders who have been working for years and years to try to get this park off the ground are both Republicans and Democrats. They're leaders in business and industry. They really want a destination park in Raleigh. They say it's going to be a big draw. It'll improve quality of life. It'll help attract more businesses. And so they see it actually as an economic development issue. So they're not happy.
On the State of Things Today, Jessica Jones, WUNC Capital Bureau Chief, talking about happenings in the state. Legislature today, and our conversation continues on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Stay tuned. This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow, today talking about the North Carolina state budget, passed the Senate on its way to the House. Jessica Jones, WUNC Capitol Bureau Chief. And joining us now is Senator Josh Stein, who is a Democrat, and he represents Wake County. Senator Stein, welcome.
Thanks, Frank. Appreciate it.
It's good to have you here. We contacted a number of Senate Republicans and even members of the House who are Republicans. All declined to appear on the show today. So, Josh Stein, you're it. Let me hear your thoughts on this budget, generally speaking. You heard us talk a little bit about it in our opening segment.
Yeah, there was one nuance I wanted to correct in your discussion earlier, is that they are making serious cuts to education, and you had said because they don't want to raise taxes. The fact of the matter is they're making these cuts to education because they want to cut taxes for the wealthy. You can have tax reform. In fact, I am one of those Democrats who want to modernize our tax system, but we have to do it in a way that's fair, that doesn't shift the burden of supporting government from the ones who have done well during the recession and put it on the backs of people who are struggling. But you also must have to do it in a revenue-neutral fashion. And as Jessica noted, the Senate Republicans have chosen to give $770 million in tax breaks to the wealthiest, and as a consequence, they are firing 4,500 teacher assistants. They are eliminating 4,800 teacher positions. They are getting rid of school support personnel. They are raising tuition on community college students to the tune of $20 million. Eliminating need-based financial aid for 8,400 students in our university system, eliminating 10,000 pre-K slots, and they're also getting rid of $50 million in proven support for economic development groups that help to try to create jobs in our rural parts of the state. And so, to me, it's a fundamental choice. Do you want to give tax breaks to the wealthy, or do you want to invest in education and economic development so that North Carolina has a brighter future? And I think that this budget reflects absolutely the wrong choice.
Well, give us a couple of the details, talking about tax breaks to people who are in better economic condition, and then in ways in which people of low wealth are hurt by the tax reform.
Sure. The tax plan that has been laid out by Senator Berger and Senator Rucho raises taxes, as Jessica noted, on food, on prescription drugs, on Social Security. It taxes nonprofits, which includes churches and hospitals. And it does all these new taxes in order to lower the tax rate on the wealthiest. And Senator Berger has this very fancy website, nctaxcut.com, where if you just plug in incomes of somebody who's at $30,000, somebody who's at $100,000, and somebody's at a million, the millionaire gets tens of thousands of dollars in tax cuts, and the taxes go up on the person earning $30,000 or $50,000 or $60,000. And so we should not be raising taxes on working and middle-class families in order to cut taxes for millionaires. It's just absolutely the wrong way to go about it. You can do a tax reform package that is fair to taxpayers, that doesn't shift the burden on who pays, and that's revenue neutral, that doesn't result in firing 4,500 teacher assistants from second and third grade classrooms, that doesn't eliminate 4,800 teacher positions. Jessica was also right that there is a special provision in the budget that says all class size protections are gone. We can have unlimited class size in kindergarten and first grade and second grade. And we are putting an unbelievable strain on teachers and on our children's education.
And obviously that's going to be a pretty tempting thing to do. If you're under any kind of budget pressure as a local school board, you just keep raising the class size. That fixes your problem, and you don't have to go back to the taxpayers and raise property taxes or anything ugly. You just make teachers take 20, 30, 35 children, and of course the impact on education is well correlated. It declines.
That's right. North Carolina is now 48th in the nation and how we pay our teachers under this Republican General Assembly. And we just simply have to prioritize education more than what the current Republican leadership does.
I want to talk now about Medicaid. Tell us about this. First of all, the decision to, which is not necessarily immediately part of the budget, but the decision not to accept federal dollars and participate in that aspect of the Affordable Care Act. How do you feel about that?
Actually, we ran an amendment that would have accepted the assistance and provided health care for 500,000 North Carolinians who currently don't have health insurance and as a result go to the emergency room and raise the costs on the rest of us. And the Republicans voted it down on a strict party line vote. And the remarkable thing is the amendment would actually have added about $60 million to our current budget because there would have been a lot of savings to other parts of our budget that the state currently pays, whether it's prisoners or AIDS drugs, that would then be transferred to the federal government through Medicaid. So, and the other thing is people say, oh, we don't want to just take federal money. This is federal money that is paid for by North Carolina taxpayers. We are going to pay these taxes to the federal government and then reject receiving them in return. There are a number of Republican states, from Virginia above us to Florida to Arizona to Ohio, and I could go on and on, that have accepted this, even though those governors oppose Obamacare. The current Republican leadership is allowing their political spite to get in the way of helping North Carolina, North Carolinians and helping our rural hospitals. There's a letter that the Hospital Association that said that rural hospitals are in jeopardy of closing because they're losing their federal payments that have helped them get through uncompensated care, but they're not getting health insurance. They're not getting the other side of the deal,
right,
which is
right.
To have patients with health insurance.
So you're saying, yeah, so my federal taxes leave the state, but they won't come back through this. And I'm curious about this, too. Senate Republican leader Phil Berger was criticized earlier this year for posting an online petition entitled Stop Obamacare in North Carolina. And that was posted as the Senate considered that legislation that has since passed that prevents the expansion of Medicaid in North Carolina, denies coverage to 500,000 North Carolinians. And what critics were saying was that Berger was deliberately misleading the public in that petition when he said that he and fellow Republicans were trying to, quote, protect us from government-formed insurance. And the fact was he knew all along there was nothing the state could do to keep that from happening. And so this past week, it's interesting because on the Bill LeMay show on WPTF radio in Raleigh, it seems that Senator Berger acknowledged that, yes, of course, the state is obliged to cover certain people by Medicaid. And in fact, he said, and I want you to hear this, in fact, the Affordable Care Act is saving the state money. Let's listen.
We're required to have certain people, because we have a Medicaid plan, covered. Right.
And there are several ways to cover folks. One is with us directly paying the full cost of the fees that are generated for the services that are provided. Another way is to provide insurance coverage for them. Because of the Affordable Care Act, it has some provisions that will allow us to pay the premiums for some folks and have them covered through the exchanges. And that actually ends up costing us less money than it would if we just paid for all the services directly by the state.
So there is Senator Phil Berger. He's the Republican leader in the Senate. He was on WPTF radio in Raleigh earlier this week. And on the line with me now is Josh Stein, a Democratic senator, represents Wake County. We asked Republicans to be on with us, including Phil Berger. They declined. Josh Stein is here. What do you make of that?
It's perplexing. I think it underscores how their decision to reject Medicaid expansion that would have provided health insurance to 500,000 North Carolinians who don't have health insurance was just a pure political ploy. It was all about politics. It's not about helping people's health care. It would save 2,300 lives a year. Studies have shown that. It would provide billions of dollars of economic activity, particularly in rural North Carolina, that would cycle through the economy, create jobs. The studies show that it would create 23,000 jobs in North Carolina. There's just no policy argument that makes any sense to have rejected North Carolina-financed federal dollars, but they have.
We've education and medical care, of course, getting a lot of attention. Are there other aspects of this budget that may have gotten less attention that you think we should be paying attention to, Josh Stein?
The budget really imposes a great cost on rural North Carolina. They cut the Rural Center, which is a wonderful economic development organization that serves rural North Carolina. They cut a whole bunch of minority economic development groups that focus on rural areas. They cut the funding for the Biotech Center in RTP in half when one of the only sectors that grew during the recession was biotech. The other is clean tech, and they've tried to kill clean tech through legislation as well. So they're undermining the very programs that are serving to help create jobs and stimulate the economy in rural areas. And I think it's a real shame. It's incredibly short-sighted. I ran an amendment that would have restored all that economic development funding and would have restored all those cuts to education that I mentioned, the tuition increases, the elimination of need-based financial aid, the hiring of teachers and TAs. It would have been paid for 100% by their tax cut for the wealthy, and they voted it down on party lines.
Democratic Senator Josh Stein represents Wake County. Thank you for being on the program today.
I appreciate it, Frank.
Josh Stein, a Democrat from Wake County. We invited Republicans, including Phil Berger, to be on the program today. They declined. We are talking about the Senate passed budget this week, and we thought we'd hear about how other parts of the state might be affected by that proposed package. Kirk Ross is a contributing reporter to the Carolina Public Press and a policy analyst for North Carolina Coastal Federation, and he has looked at the potential impact on the mountains and the coast. Kirk, welcome to the program.
Oh, hi, Frank. How are you? Thanks for having me on.
Good to have you here. Jessica Jones is still here, our Capitol Bureau Chief. Let's talk about the environment. How are both western and coastal North Carolina affected by the state, this proposed Senate budget?
Well, there was, I guess to the environmental community, there was a bright spot in this budget, which is that the Senate did a whole lot better in terms of land conservation and water conservation than the governor did. They did this by ending two very popular, long-running clean water and land conservation funds and combining them into one new fund that's called the Water and Land Conservation Fund, and they provided some steady money for it. What's happened in the past, Clean Water Management Trust Fund, which is distributed almost $1 billion since 96 for things like acquiring the headwaters of critical watersheds, improving wastewater treatment facilities in small towns throughout the state, and doing stream restoration and things like that. They've done they provided a lot of grants to do some improvements. it was supposed to, when it was designed, it was supposed to get about $100 million a year from the state. It's only rarely gotten that. But in the last few years, the funding's been cut, first under the Purdue administration, and then when the Republicans took over the House and Senate, they dropped the funding, cut it by 90%, basically. Down, it's about $12 million now. The governor's budget had $6.75 million for it in the first year and nothing in the second year. And it really seemed like that program was going to get zeroed out. They took that program, the Senate took that program and the Natural Heritage Trust Fund, you know, which is really designed to preserve what people in North Carolina call, like to call the goodliest lands, some of the real rare habitats and important pieces of property around the state. And they took those two funds, merged them together, and set up some steady funding for them. So I think while the environmental community is probably not happy that those programs are ended or that their funding is so much more than or so much less than intended originally, they are pretty pleased that there is a mechanism now, and it does seem to have at least a lot better funding set up than what the governor
did. Yeah, and it sounds like there's more like a reorganization than cuts in spending. Overall, is there more or less spending on conservation in this Senate proposal?
Well, in the Senate proposal, far more than what the governor was proposing. And as you said, it is a reorganization. And, you know, in talking to some of the folks who've been involved in this, you know, including like Bill Holman, who ran the fund and is a very strong environmentalist, you know, folks like that are saying that the predictability is really important. If you're in a small town in western or eastern North Carolina and you're trying to get some people whose septic systems are failing and they're polluting some kind of surface water and you want to get them on the county sewer hookup, it's expensive. And you need that support to leverage your local funds and maybe what the feds have given you. And so the Clean Water Management Trust Fund has been really helpful in helping small communities leverage their money and get these projects done. It's a real good bang for the buck. So.
And this kind of puts them on a sounder foundation, a more reliable foundation.
What we were seeing, Frank, was folks had stopped applying for grants because they knew they couldn't get it. And the idea was people were stopping thinking big about things.
Also, several prisons and juvenile detention centers. I know this was a concern in western North Carolina. Some of those prisons and juvenile detention centers across the state closing, some in Buncombe County. Tell us about that.
Well, it was a pretty big hit in western North Carolina. There's the Buncombe County centers, Buncombe County Correctional. That they're losing 48 state jobs. There's the big one is the Western Youth Institution, which is the offenders that are in that program are going to be transferred to another institution nearby, but the end result is a loss of 288 state jobs, and that's in some small communities in Western North Carolina that is a major employer, and so you know what Senator Seinstead kind of plays into that. There's a lot of concern in rural North Carolina that the state is dialing back its support across the board.
Yeah, well, and to go back to the other issue, medical care, that is also a huge concern in those rural areas. Tell us about that.
Well, the combination of not going for the Medicaid expansion and the budget is just going to be a double hit out in areas where these small rural hospitals or small town community health centers they're going to see services cutting back. They're going to be taking fewer Medicaid patients. The Affordable Care Act reduces the payments to the rural hospitals and intentionally because there was an assumption that the states would buy into the Medicaid expansion. So there's going to be a real train wreck here in a couple of years for the small hospitals, the rural health centers. And
Well, and they're hurting already, right?
Yeah. And you're going to see some closings. You're going to see some consolidations. And, you know, the upshot of that is if you are in rural North Carolina, your closest hospital or your closest medical provider may be farther away. And, you don't have that same kind of quality of care.
Right.
There are more barriers to getting care.
Well, Jessica Jones, there is now a Senate package. It has passed. It's on its way to the House. What happens next?
Well, what happens next is that the House will take a look at it and see what they like about it and what they don't like about it. I think one of the things that many of us are wondering about is the fact that there are many policy provisions in this budget, and the budget is at least 400 pages long. So there are a lot of things in there. This is not just a bare bones sort of basic accounting of what the state needs. And so I think it remains to be seen whether or not the House and Senate would actually have the time to debate over a lot of those policy provisions. Personally, I think a lot of people think there's no way that they're going to agree about every single policy provision. So that could be also a bargaining tool that could be used as kind of a chip between the two chambers.
We will stay tuned. Jessica Jones, WNC Capitol Bureau Chief. Kirk Ross is a contributing reporter to the Carolina Public Press, which you can find online, and the North Carolina Coastal Federation, where he is a policy analyst. Kirk, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Jessica, thank you.
Thanks.
Coming up next, the music of Hope Marasco. Stay tuned.
I'm getting by, I'm hanging on, just getting by, I'm moving on, I'm gonna try to love, to love, to love. Like a train that's leaving the station behind, like a captive fleeing in the dead of night. Like birds in formation taking flight, I'm moving on, I'm hanging on, just getting by, I'm moving on, I'm gonna try to love, to love, to love, to love.